Blog Talk Radio.
Alexandria, the city of Alexandria in the shadows of Washington, D.C. Welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio, and in this hour we have Health Watch. This is the program that will run for the next 1 hour, is Health Watch, in which we look at issues of health and wellness. Welcome this morning to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. We will have Dr. Gretchen Bebek, who should be speaking to us from Chikankada. Let me see if we have already got our guest this morning. Dr. Bebek, can you hear me?
I can definitely hear you. Good morning for you. Good afternoon for me.
It's good morning here, and thank you. Welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio, to all our listeners on the web this morning. We will be together with Dr. Gretchen Bebek, who is in Chikankata. How is Chikankata this morning, Dr. Bebek?
Doing very well at Chikankata. It's a bit muddy, but the maize is looking good, so we're having a nice rainy season at Chikankata.
Right. We seem to be having good rains in Zambia this year. We have listeners across the world, in different parts of the world, who have tuned in, and some have called in so they can, in fact, engage with us in the next hour dialogue. Let me get a few of them to just say hi to you before we proceed. Nathan, are you there? Good morning, Nathan. Are you online? We have Roger. Good morning, Roger. Are you there this morning?
Yes. Can you hear me, Brother Mark?
Yes, I can hear you. We are glad to have you online, and thank you for bringing our guest this morning. Dr. Bebek will get right away to our subject for this morning. I think our lines are now well firmly connected. Please introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll get right on. Take a minute and tell us about what you're doing.
Well, good morning to all of your listeners. My name is Gretchen Burback, and I am a neurologist. So I'm a physician who specializes in the care of brain disorders and nervous system disorders. And I'm fortunate enough that I have the opportunity to work in Zambia several months each year. And my interest is primarily in improving the health care and the lives of people with epilepsy, So people who have seizure disorders in the Zambian region and also in some surrounding countries. So my personal mission is to work closely with the healthcare providers and the community around the hospital that I'm based at in Zambia, which is Chikankata Hospital, to try and improve healthcare services for people with epilepsy and also to try to improve the general lives that these individuals lead. Because as some of you may know, epilepsy, although it's a medical condition, is frequently misunderstood. And so our goal is to try to improve that situation in this environment.
Thank you very much. This year we started on a theme, health, our most prized possession. Now, we are all aware that with all that is going on, the business and the success that is going on around us and all that we can do, everything can come to a standstill, everything can come to a halt when our health breaks down. And so the main idea of this forum is to bring to mind to discuss issues that are important about health. Now, health has got no boundaries. It affects us whether we are successful or we are not successful in life, whether we are educated or we are not educated in the villages, as it does also those that live in the cities. And when we talk about health here, we are focusing on the following areas: on the emotional wellness, on our intellectual wellness, occupational and physical wellness. We're also looking at social wellness and our spiritual wellness. We are mindful that in the definition of good health, that includes not just our physical, but also our emotional and spiritual well-being. And so this topic that we bring to our listeners today is extremely important, and I would like us to discover more about epilepsy, let the guest talk on what is it that causes epilepsy, Dr. Bibek. Just take us through that.
That's a very good question, and in fact, we know that there are some causes for epilepsy. So, examples of problems that can cause epilepsy: head trauma. If someone has had a significant head injury, say a head injury so severe they were in coma for some time, that can cause a brain injury that would later cause epilepsy. We should be clear when we talk about epilepsy that epilepsy is a problem in which people have repeated seizures and there's no immediate cause. So if someone has a seizure because right now they have severe malaria, that's not epilepsy. That's just malaria and a seizure. Epilepsy is when someone who's feeling well in their life, they're trying to work, trying to take care of their family, when that person just suddenly has a seizure for no good reason. When that happens again and again, repeated seizures, that's epilepsy. And things that can cause epilepsy include things like head injury. Head injury can cause epilepsy. A birth injury, so someone who is born and it's a very difficult birth, that can result in a brain injury that leads to epilepsy. We also know that someone who has a severe infection with cerebral malaria or an infection of the brain and meninges or the nervous system can lead to epilepsy. But what's very important to know is that among people who have epilepsy, for about 30% or 1 in 3 people, we don't know why. There's no good reason why. It just happens, and we may never find a reason why they have this problem. So
right. Well, I was going to say
something that happened that caused the brain injury, but sometimes we just don't know. They just come with this problem.
So how do you go about to tell the cause of epilepsy? How do you diagnose epilepsy in an individual? how do you distinguish it from other conditions there?
One of the most important things is to get a good medical history. So if someone as a physician is seeing a person who is having seizures, it's important to ask a lot of questions. And what a physician realizes is when these seizures happen, is there some problem? Is it because you are very ill? Or in children, in young children who are less than 5 years old, if they have a fever for any reason, malaria, chest infection, in young children, seizures can come because of fever. That's not epilepsy. So we want to know, are these seizures, are these episodes you're having seizures? And if they are seizures, are they just coming, or are they coming for a reason because you're sick? If you're sick with malaria, if you just suddenly had a blow to the head and you have a seizure, that's not epilepsy. Epilepsy is when you're living your life, everything is okay, and suddenly a seizure comes unexpectedly. And that's one of the reasons why epilepsy is such a difficult disorder, because people who are feeling well, who are trying to just live a normal life, suddenly out of nowhere will experience a seizure. And not only that, but every day they live their life, they know they might have a seizure. So they have one problem is the seizure, and the other problem is the worry about a seizure. So it's a very complicated disorder. So as a physician, I want to know what is happening. I need to confirm in my own understanding that the episodes the patient is concerned about are actually seizures. And then I want to know, when are they occurring? Are they just coming, or is there a reason? Is it around illness? Is it around fever in a child? And so to make the diagnosis of epilepsy is mostly about talking very carefully to the person who's having these episodes, but also to their family or to individuals who have witnessed the episodes, because usually the person who has a seizure doesn't remember a great deal and won't be able to tell you a great deal. So it's important also to get a history from a witness. And to make the diagnosis of epilepsy, most of the time, all that is required is a very careful history. We don't usually require exotic, expensive testing. It's mostly a matter of listening to the patient and their family.
Right. There's a lot of myths around epilepsy and epileptic seizures, and seizures in general, actually. There's a lot of myths around, and I can imagine that working with communities, as you have done for the number of years, you have come across some of those. Can you talk about one or two of those myths that you have come across?
Absolutely. You're very right. The myths are a problem, and they're primarily a problem because these myths involve explanations for epilepsy that fail to recognize that epilepsy is a medical condition. You know, epilepsy is like hypertension or tuberculosis. Epilepsy is a medical problem. It's caused by a physical illness, and it can be treated with tablets and other management. It's not a problem of witchcraft, which we often encounter, where people, they didn't come to the hospital when they began to have seizures because they believed that the seizures were being brought about because someone had placed a black magic spell or bad magic. There was some witchcraft involved. And we hear that people believe that the seizures came because someone was jealous. They were too successful, and they were having witchcraft against them. Or sometimes the blame is that the person perhaps has done something that has annoyed the ancestors, and so they're being cursed for that. So we hear this sometimes. People even believe it's a possession with an evil spirit. And again, it's important that everyone understand that it's a brain disorder. It's easy to understand why people might believe in it's witchcraft, because you have someone who looks healthy, who feels healthy, who's just walking in their lives doing normal things, and suddenly they may collapse and they may shake. They may even be incontinent. It's not a pleasant illness to witness. And so you can understand why it might be attributed to witchcraft. But in fact, it's a situation in which a brain has become short-circuited, just like a piece of electrical equipment can develop a short circuit. It's just the same. And so those myths that it is witchcraft or that it is possession by the devil, these are problematic, because when people attribute seizures to these problems, they will take the person to a healer, they will take them to others, but they won't bring them to hospital where we can actually provide medications to stop the seizures. This is why it's really important that people understand that epilepsy and seizures are actually a brain disorder, just like tuberculosis is a lung disorder. That's a very important thing that people understand.
Well, thank you. There are so many people who are listening to us, and I am sure if we went around asking if they knew anyone who had seizures or who had epileptic seizures, they'll probably know someone or have a relative connected to them in relationships. What do you do when somebody falls down and is epileptic or in an epileptic seizure? What do you do?
That is a wonderful question, and I think you're right. I think most people in Zambia either know someone who has epilepsy or they've seen an epileptic attack. They've witnessed a seizure. And so the most important thing to tell them is that what they should do is just try to keep that person safe. Try to keep them from falling into the fire. We see so many terrible burns. Try to keep that person, when they fall, from falling or rolling into the fire. If they fall into a fire, if they fall into a lake or a stream or a body of water, pull them out, because this is not a contagious disease. No one will catch this disease. It's not contagious. It's okay to help them. You must. And so you must pull them away from anything that is dangerous, whether it be fire or water or sharp stones on the ground. They need to be pulled safely from that, and just let them lie quietly. They won't be quiet at first. They may be shaking. But you must just let them shake somewhere where they can be safe. And when the fitting has stopped and they're sleeping, roll them gently onto their right side. And that's all you must do. They mustn't put anything in the mouth. They shouldn't put anything in the nose. They shouldn't hold them fast to the ground. Just keep them safe. And when the shaking has stopped, turn them on to their right side. And most of the time, after just a couple of minutes, people will wake up. Most of the time. The thing
do,
we don't want
do these seizures happen when somebody is sleeping, say in the night, or somebody is just lying down to rest on a couch at noon and or sometime in the day, and seizures, epileptic seizures, take them in their sleep?
So seizures can happen at any time. They absolutely can happen when someone is sleeping at night. In fact, when I take a medical history from a person who we think may be having seizures, I always want to speak with whoever shares a bedroom with that person, because they may be having fits even at night and they don't even know it. So people can have seizures while they're sleeping out of sleep. They can have seizures when they're taking a nap during the day, or very importantly, they can just be standing over the Shima pot cooking dinner. They could have a seizure. They could be just walking down Cairo Road. Suddenly a seizure comes. That's the very, very difficult thing about epilepsy, is that people have no warning, whether they're sleeping, they're walking down Cairo Road, or they're just cooking supper. The seizure could just come without warning. The unexpected nature of the seizure makes them dangerous and leads to a lot of worry. So they can happen at any time.
Let me welcome a few of our friends who are online so we can get lines established. Titus, your line is open. You can please tell us where you are and greet our guest.
This is Titus Natala, I hope, from Minnesota, Minneapolis. I appreciate the subject matter, and I wanted to check with the doctor in terms of how much is the percentage of epileptic situations do we have based on situations, especially for Zambia, where people take it that this is the Witchcraft Act or something like that. Should we take every situation that maybe most people consider to be a Witchcraft Act upon somebody to be most likely it's epileptic of nature and then rule it out? What is the percentage and what and how many people are, you know, are not treated because people are taking it with the concept of witchcraft or something like that?
Shall I answer the question?
Sure.
Okay. That's a wonderful question, Sarah. I don't know about all the problems that people might have if they would attribute to witchcraft. But if someone is having episodes in which suddenly they lose consciousness and they fall to the ground and they shake, and sometimes they bite the tongue, and sometimes they will pass urine or pass feces, okay? And then afterwards, they're very sleepy. As a medical person, I would say that is a seizure. When someone has those episodes, that is a seizure, and absolutely that gets misattributed to witchcraft. There are types of seizures that involve episodes of staring and confusion, sometimes very brief, just 2 or 3 minutes. These can also be seizure. When people have these spells where they either lose consciousness, fall to the ground and shake, or where for some minutes they stare and are confused, this is almost always a seizure, and this is not witchcraft. There may be other things people do, bizarre behaviors that could be any number of witchcraft-related or medical-related problems. But for these episodes in which there is an abrupt loss of awareness or a loss of consciousness with motor dysfunction, sometimes tongue biting, sometimes loss of urine or stool, often with associated sleepiness and confusion afterwards, this is epilepsy. This is seizure. And that is not witchcraft. And I think you're correct that many, many times there is a misattribution of these episodes being due to witchcraft. And it's so important that we bring out the realities that this is a medical problem and can be treated
right
with medicine.
Now, obviously, in the communities where you are working, Dr. Bibik, there are you have a large number of witch doctors and traditional healers. What is the relationship that you have developed and that you have found the nature of a relationship with the traditional healers in context of epileptic care?
That's a very good question. I have to say, some years ago, as we began working with this disorder, we at Chikankata with the epilepsy care team held a series of symposium and information exchange meetings with the local Nganga, with our local healers. And I was very impressed. So the traditional healers are excellent history takers, and they know this problem very well. And they were able to describe to me seizures that I think many general physicians in America might not even recognize. So I have to say the traditional healers are excellent history takers, and they know very well this problem. Now, healers often will take care of someone who has one seizure. They have their first seizure episode. And many people who have one seizure will never have another seizure. And that is not epilepsy. Epilepsy is when someone has repeated seizures for no reason. And when I have talked to the healers, they have said to me, when a patient has many seizures, when they keep doing this problem, they say, I can't help them. This is not something I can cure. And that's when I say to the healer, I can't cure the problem, but I have a medicine that will help. And we've been very successful in developing a referral relationship so that the traditional healers in our area who are seeing someone who has one fit and then another and then another, they say, this is not something I can cure, but I can send you to a doctor who can at least give you tablets that will help. And we've been very successful. I can even say a number of the healers in our area have sent family members to us for assistance. So they very much take care of acute events and single seizures. But when someone has one seizure, then another, they keep having this problem, it goes away for a few weeks, then they have another. The healers don't believe they can cure that problem, and most of them have been very happy to send the patient to us for further care. So I think we actually take care of the patients after the healers feel that the patients have reached a point that they can't be cured or taken care of anymore. And in our area, we've been very successful in working collaboratively with the healers.
Okay, that's good. Are we off air?
I don't know. I'm still on the line.
Looks like you've lost the host.
Technical difficulties.
Is Roger there?
It looks like we have lost the host.
She's breaking up, huh?
Can you not hear me?
Dr. Grayton?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, please go ahead. There was a little bit of breaking transmission there.
All right.
Oh, sorry for
we
that.
We would like you to give us a breakdown of how you have approached the care for epileptics in the catchment area in which you are working with and Zambia as a health provider.
Well, I think there are many, many different aspects of epilepsy care that must be considered. First, people with seizures in the community have to recognize that these episodes are seizures, that they're not witchcraft, it's not possession by the devil, that this is a medical problem. So first, we have to educate the community so that when people have seizures, they know to seek medical care. Then, when the person who has had this seizure comes to the hospital or the clinic, we
mm-hmm.
have to make certain that the clinic staff have been trained and educated to recognize seizures and to know how to treat them. They have to know what they are, best medications to treat them are. So that's the next step. Then
right.
we have to make certain that those medicines are available in the pharmacies and in the medical boxes. So I think educating the community, educating the healthcare workers, and then making sure the medications are there are the three most
mm-hmm.
important things we must do.
Right. Let me open the lines to, we have Edith calling on line 909. Please go ahead and speak to the guest this morning.
This is Esther from California, and I have three questions actually for Dr. Bebek. The first one is epilepsy also caused by inheritory? Can you inherit? Let's say you are born from a parent who has had a history of epilepsy. Can a child inherit that? Is there a possibility that the child can also suffer from epilepsy? Then the second one is that how trained are your medical staff in the care of epilepsy? Do you have any percentage of staff that have no training in epilepsy care, or is everybody in the clinic or everybody in the health center responsible for epilepsy care trained in that field? And then the third one is that do you have consistent supply of medicines, the drugs from the Ministry of Health to actually manage the epilepsy care? Because when an individual has epilepsy, they usually have a long term or they stay long on drugs. Do you have a consistent supply of drugs from the Ministry of Health, or do you also have a supply of drugs from the private sector? I mean, I understand that Chikankata should be, I think, a Salvation Army hospital. Do you have supplies for that, or do you have, if you have shortages from the Ministry of Health, if that's the case, do you have a shortfall filled in by the private suppliers of medications? Esther from California.
Thank you, Esther from California. Three excellent questions. First, let me take the question about the genetics or the family history. Epilepsy is not contagious. It also is not passed in the family. So if the mother or father has epilepsy, likely none of the children will. It's not passed in that way. We do know within families, if there is a lot of epilepsy, if there's a cousin and an uncle, many people affected, the chance of a relative having epilepsy is slightly higher than the chance of someone who is in a family with no epilepsy. So if there's a great deal of epilepsy in the family, your personal risk as being a family member is slightly higher than the average community member, but it's not that much higher. It's just a slight elevation. So epilepsy is not clearly passed down the family line from mother to child or from father to child. It's more complicated than that. And probably to have epilepsy, it must not just be that a relative has it, but you must also probably have some other problem, either an illness or an injury that stimulates it. So it is not a directly inherited disorder.
Thank you for that. Let me go to Dr. Chongo, and I apologize to Esther for the name labels that are on the switchboard. I am sorry. Let's go to Dr. Chongo. Please speak to the guest.
This is Dr. Chongo from Arkansas. Dr. Bebek, may I thank you for taking your time to be in my area. Actually, Chikankata, that's my village. I come specifically from Malala area. And I'm glad you are there. How are you? Yes. My question is, What is the success rate like? As you meet people in that, you have called it more of a brain problem, how much success are you getting on treating them?
I'm sorry, Dr. Chongo, could you repeat the question, please?
The question is, have you been successful in treating or curing, not just taking care of those that have? Have you been able to cure those who have been diagnosed with epilepsy?
Thank you. So when I take care of a patient with epilepsy, mm-hmm. what I can offer is I can offer medications that will decrease the risk of a seizure. So these are medications, I would call them symptomatic medications. So the seizures are the symptom of a brain problem, and I'm only treating the symptoms. So unfortunately, with just medications, I can never cure epilepsy. However, people who have epilepsy whose symptoms are treated, whose seizures are stopped with medications for at least 2 years, we say that person has gone into remission. They no longer have epilepsy. They had a history of epilepsy. It's in remission. And you might consider that a cure, but the medicines I have will only suppress the seizures, and they don't take away the underlying problem. Sometimes the problem just goes away with time. There's a small group of people who may have cure with surgery, but that's a very small number of people. Most people with epilepsy, they either require lifetime treatment or, after successful treatment, they will go without seizures for a long time. We call that epilepsy in remission. We remove, stop the drugs, and many of them will never need medicines again. But I do not have a cure, and a cure for epilepsy is not really available medically except for a small number of people who have a problem that can be cured surgically, and that's not common.
Right. Thank you for those remarks. In epileptic care in Zambia, a study that you did in 2005, and in publications that you have put out more recently, you have talked about the challenges of health care systems in Zambia. Would you care to explain to us some of the challenges that you have observed? And I think this follows up also on Esther's question, which I thought perhaps you could also comment on the supply of drugs. How good is it, and what are the challenges that you have seen or observed?
Yes. So we definitely have an insufficient number of trained medical staff in Zambia. And this isn't a problem just for epilepsy. This is a general problem. We don't have enough medical officers. We would love to have more nurses and more clinical officers. And so anytime you don't have all the staff you would like, the staff that are working have a very limited period of time to evaluate patients. And to evaluate a person with a seizure disorder, it's a long process. It requires a long time talking and really trying to understand what's happened. So a lack of time on the part of the healthcare workers is one problem. Of course, we also have to make certain that healthcare workers are properly trained to deal with this disorder. And in the past, all of the training materials that taught mm-hmm. healthcare workers how to take care of epilepsy, how to diagnose epilepsy, how to treat epilepsy. In the past, all of those materials were really developed for physicians, when in fact many people who seek care will be seen by a clinical officer or a nurse. Now, we're very fortunate in that just in the last year, the World Health Organization has developed a system of evidence-based guidelines. And these mm-hmm. evidence-based guidelines, called the Mental Health Gap Action Program, these guidelines give clear instructions that are appropriate for the training of nurses and clinical officers that tell them exactly how to diagnose epilepsy and how to treat it with the drugs that are available. So training of healthcare workers is going to become much more feasible with these new tools that the World Health Organization has developed for training of clinical officers and nurses. You mentioned the issue of drugs, and drugs are a problem. Now, the medications to treat epilepsy are not expensive. We believe that you can get enough medicine to treat an adult with epilepsy for 1 year for less than $5 US. So they're not expensive medications. But they are what's called controlled substances or scheduled medications, which means that the pharmaceutical regulatory authority in Zambia is supposed to be tracking the use of these drugs. That makes it very difficult for the pharmacists, whether it's a pharmacist in a private pharmacy or a pharmacist at a government hospital, because they now have to track every tablet, how many tablets received, then who they gave those tablets to. And this tracking requires a lot of work, and sometimes it makes the pharmacist decide just not to deal with this drug, even though it's a cheap medication. So our work in Zambia includes trying to collaborate with the Ministry of Health to come up with solutions to these bottlenecks or barriers to treatment, because the medications are not expensive. And we did complete, I think, a very important study last year that showed that there are problems with people accessing these drugs, even though the drugs are not expensive. There are administrative and logistical problems. So there must be a solution. And we're working with our colleagues at UTH, at Trinama, at other hospitals in Zambia, to try to come up with solutions to provide a more consistent supply of medications for persons with epilepsy.
Right. Dr. Musanje, please go ahead. The line is open.
Hi, Dr. Bebek. My name is Elliot Musanje, and I'm here in near Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, United States. I wanted to find out from you about pregnancy complications with in women who are epileptic. I don't have a lot of experience in epileptic conditions, but I had an uncle who was epileptic, so that is as much as I know about this condition. So the question is about pregnancy complications. What do you know about someone who is pregnant and is epileptic, and what kind of care you give them?
So women in general, I think even before the pregnancy, when I take care of a woman with epilepsy, one of the important things is before she ever gets pregnant, I want to put that woman on a folate supplement. The drugs that we give women with epilepsy for treatment, and these drugs include things like phenobarbital or phenobarbital, these drugs can cause a problem in the fetus that will cause them to have a neural tube defect. And that can be a cleft palate, a cleft lip, or a spinal bifida, an open spinal cord. And the way to prevent that is before the woman ever gets pregnant, any woman with epilepsy who is taking epilepsy medications, she should be placed on a folate supplement. Before she ever gets pregnant, it has to be before, because by the time she knows she is pregnant, the problem could already be there. That's the first and most important thing. A second important issue is that women who are taking epilepsy medications, they need to notify their healthcare provider if they are on family planning tablets. Any type of family planning that involves hormones, so oral contraceptives or birth control pills, injections that will also prevent pregnancy, these tablets and injections are not very effective. They're not as effective if the woman is also taking an epilepsy medicine. So we have to warn her, because she may be on family planning. She's not ready to have another baby. We give her family planning to prevent that, and yet then we give her an epilepsy medicine, and the family planning tablets don't work. So that's another important piece of educating women who have epilepsy. Then the third thing, the woman with epilepsy has to be counseled that the medicines that she is taking for epilepsy are important. Because if she has a lot of seizures, if she's fitting a lot during pregnancy, that is bad for the baby. So she has to be well controlled. And that pregnancy should be watched carefully. She should be delivering that baby in the hospital with close medical supervision. So if there is a problem, if she starts to have seizures, someone is there to help her. She should not be delivering by a birth attendant in the community. She should be coming to hospital. And if she's had epilepsy medications, it may cause her to have trouble clotting the blood. It can cause trouble with her clotting time. So both she and the baby need to receive vitamin K, her before the delivery and the baby after delivery, to prevent bleeding problems. Women with epilepsy can have very healthy babies, and they shouldn't be discouraged from getting married and having families. But they need support. They need folate before they have children. They need to have good counseling when they want family planning assistance. And when they are pregnant, they need good medical care, and the delivery should take place in a supervised setting. That's what I would say about epilepsy.
Thank you. Let's go to Simbaya. Ms. Simbaya, please go ahead. The line is open.
Yes, thank you, Doctor, once more for being there. I sometimes, as Zambians, we're not in our own country, we're all over the place, but I feel a little bit bad sometimes. But thanks for being there for us. I appreciate that. But I want to give you a question, because I've worked with the people with seizures, and I think that seizures can be broken into grammar seizures and small seizures and all those kind of things. So maybe some people don't understand them. The other question, what I wanted to say was, I'm more interested in what are the drug-induced seizures? And could you explain to me, Doctor, the morbidity and the mortality in that general function? And also the patients that have compromised liver and kidney functions, what are the complications on those grounds? If you could shine some light on those. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the drugs we use most commonly in Zambia are phenobarbital and carbamazepine. And those drugs, when they're used in high-income, very wealthy areas, are frequently monitored very closely for liver and kidney problems. To say, those problems are not common. They're not a common problem. If phenobarbital is used in healthy doses, in safe doses, if the patient will have side effects, those side effects are usually going to be sedation or possibly in children bad behaviors. So while in some settings liver and kidney function would be monitored carefully, with carbamazepine and phenobarbital, that is not a big problem. There is a drug called valproic acid or valproate. Now, we don't use that very often in Zambia, but if it is used here, we recommend monitoring of the liver function. But it's not the drug we choose first or the drug we choose second. When you ask about the morbidity and mortality, sadly, epilepsy has a large morbidity and mortality related to seizure injuries. So people falling and becoming injured, people falling and getting terrible burns or perhaps drowning, those are the biggest problems with morbidity and mortality with epilepsy. And the other problem is people on drugs that suddenly cannot get their drug supply. Suddenly they've been taking phenobarbital, the seizures are well controlled, then suddenly they can't find that drug anywhere. Sadly, those individuals have a risk of developing a very long seizure or developing status epilepticus, a seizure that isn't stopping, and that can also be a fatal event. So there is certainly morbidity and mortality associated with epilepsy. When used carefully in the right doses, the phenobarbital and the carbamazepine we use, they're pretty safe drugs. The biggest problem we see is sometimes sedation and sometimes some behavioral problems in children. And we have lots of trouble with seizure-related injuries, so that's a big problem in our environment.
Did you have a follow-up question?
No, I just want to ask the doctor as well that I don't believe in witchcraft, but I don't know how much you believe in spiritual things. I also do believe that some of the things that cannot be healed by the doctors, they certainly might need extra prayers. We may differ with me, but that's my belief. I believe that some things are beyond just some of these things may. Someone might give exactly the same symptoms of having seizures, but they may not be exactly seizures. There may be spiritual things behind. Do I tell people to go to witchcraft? No, I think I believe in prayer. So I don't know whether you have differences or whether you sometimes say, you know what, there are some things that we may need spiritual intervention. There are also some things that we need medicines and science to come in. I don't know what you'd say on that one. You weren't very clear in the beginning. Would you shed some light? Thank you.
Everyone with epilepsy deserves to have treatments with medical care. So they deserve to have the medicines that take care of seizures. But I absolutely agree with you. It's very complicated. Why does someone have a seizure today and not tomorrow? What is the cause today? And I believe that spiritual strength and spiritual support from the community and prayers are an important part of treating all illnesses. Those we have treatments for in medicine and those we do not. And I think those things go hand in hand. So I absolutely want all of my patients who have epilepsy and active seizures, I want them to have tablets. But I believe there's a great deal to be gained from spiritual strength and from spiritual support from the community and from prayer. And those are not mutually exclusive. I think they're important partners in trying to help someone, because I can't tell you why someone with epilepsy has a seizure today and not tomorrow. And in that regard, I think the spiritual aspects are very important.
Thank you very much for that. And thank you for all the questions. You have been involved with this community for some time now. We have only 4 minutes left, but I'd like you to take a minute or two to tell us, how did you actually get involved? For anyone who knows what you and your team are achieving in Zambia, it's impressive. But how did you get involved, and what has been the most rewarding experience that you've had, if you just care to share with us for a few minutes remaining?
Well, I'm now moving into my 17th year of working in this setting, and it all began 17 years ago when I was just a curious medical student. I was training in Chicago at a very modern hospital, but I had grown up in a small rural farm town in the southern U.S., and I knew that medicine was practiced differently in different places, and I was just curious. I was just curious. So I wrote many letters to many different parts of the world asking if I could please come and do a rotation in a foreign setting. And by pure luck or good circumstance, the chief medical officer at Chicancada, who was then a Dr. David Winters. Dr. Winters was a graduate of my medical school, and the dean of my medical school was a bit worried. She didn't really want me to go abroad to some foreign place. But Dr. Winters wrote a nice letter, and he said, she can come do the rotation at Chicancada, and I will supervise her. So that was how I was fortunate enough to come to Chicancada. And I think sometimes we go someplace and we just know that's where we belong. And I think not long after I had arrived in Zambia, I realized this was a place I was supposed to be. And I can't give you a better reason. Maybe this is the spiritual part. It was just where I was supposed to be. And I've been very fortunate that I've been able to be part of the medical community for so many years. Those things that have affected me, there have been many. I have seen people who thought their lives were finished, who have been women who had been abandoned by their families, women who had lost their children, children who had been ejected from school, men who had lost their jobs and lost their respect in the community. I've seen this happen to people because of epilepsy, and I have seen, with good treatment that stops the seizures, I've seen them regain their jobs, regain access to schooling, be able to have a family and have a life. And that transformation is so important because it's so possible. This is not a disease that we have no power over. We have the capacity to treat this disease. And being able to stop the seizures transforms the lives of people with epilepsy. And it's very possible. And bringing that possibility to more people in Zambia is a very important thing that I'm very honored and proud to be part of.
We have come to the end of our hour, and we really, really appreciate having you on our program this morning or this afternoon. Thank you so much. And next week, we hope to have Dr. Sarajima. We'll be speaking with him on community living and the stress of living in the community and the impact of stress on our hearts. So we invite you to join us again next week.
Thank you.